Okay, welcome to self-love or self-value, the key to getting your non-negotiable needs met by him and others. Okay, I'm your host, Jason, and we'll go for our usual, I think this time it'll be about a half an hour, and then I want to take your questions. And, you know, you've already gotten some of this material, and so some of this is review. And I'm adding a couple little distinctions and layers to it. So I think it's going to be helpful for you. Just to set context why I'm doing this, I just like to continue to help people who are investing in themselves and have already invested in themselves. And number two, there's a lot of crap, honestly, about loving yourself out there in the world. And I like to get things practical. Like, okay, give me the how-to guide, right? So this is my, you know, a little stab at that conversation, how to embrace more of yourself, knowing that it's a lifelong journey. So in this class, we'll do a quick review of the non-negotiable needs, the triple N there. And we're going to cover the biggest and most important non-negotiable need you have. You might be aware of this, and you might not, and I'm going to articulate it in a way that you can understand and hopefully embrace. We'll cover what is self-love, how to actually value yourself. Okay, so let's review what's a non-negotiable need. Non-negotiable needs that you're willing to take a stand for and not compromise, negotiate, or sacrifice. It's deal breaker clarity on what you need. Examples: making babies, being into growth-oriented relationships, religion, heterosexual or gay preferences, where to live, certain lifestyle choices, monogamy, traditional setup. You raise the kids while I'm the provider. You know, I go out and make the money. Sometimes some of us have those types of non-negotiable needs. Think of a business partnership. I need you to do X and I will do Y. We need each other to fulfill specific roles. And we have very specific needs there. I need to make money if I'm going to run a business, right? And that's a need. And if I don't get that need met, I will shut down the doors and not run that business anymore. Relationships without non-negotiable needs. Couples get stuck in a fearful stance of not stepping into these for fear of losing relationship, right? I've talked a lot about this. You won't be you because you're afraid to upset him. Security and resentment fights, okay? Those are the kind of fights we have when we are afraid to step into what we actually need. We'll fight about it. You will override to keep connection. And you keep reaching for a pain-free relationship. Most people are in reaction to their world and not empowered, so they allow others to dictate their needs for them and then resent them. So when you don't step into your needs here and you're not really owning those, you will allow the world to dictate your needs and you'll be reacting based on what other people need from you versus what you need for yourself. Okay, let's talk about wants, needs, and shoulds. A want is a desire to have something for my personal gain or fulfillment. Okay, it's not a requirement, it's just a desire. A need is a variety of requirements in order to live in different levels of development. Okay, and we'll take a quick peek at Maslow's hierarchy of needs. Shoulds are imperatives that we interject from the outside that go against our POS. I should not eat sugar. I shouldn't call my... I should call my mother. I should return that text from that friend that I'm annoyed by. I should get in shape. I should write that book. You know, those are shoulds, not actual values and priorities. Those are usually other people's values and priorities that they put on us and we bite and we agree to them. Okay, so the basic difference between a want and a need here, I want you to be different, but I don't need you to be. This is in a really, really important sentence. If you look at your man and say, I want you to be different, but I don't need you to be, That's a loving statement. However, if you're honest, you can't make that statement about certain things. So let's say he drinks 7 nights a week. I want you to be different, but I don't need you to be, is probably not honest. If I'm going to keep, you're going to keep living in this house and being married to me, I want you to be different and I need you to be. I need you to sober up. I need you to drink less. I need you to get in recovery. I need you to do something about it. And I have a timeline on that. Okay. That's an area where I can't make this statement. An area where I can is, you know, I want you to eat healthier, honey, but I don't need you to. Right? It's his body. It's his life. If he wants to put shit in his mouth and his face and his body, that's his prerogative. Okay, but you don't really need him to because it's not your body. It's his life, right? So get the difference there? So the reason this sentence matters is it's going to help you distinguish, well, is this true? I want you to be different, but I don't really need you to be. I can't, like, for example, I can't say to my wife in the area of personal growth and development, I want you to, let's say she wasn't into personal growth and development. I can't say, I want you to be different, but I don't need you to be. No way. I would say, honey, I want you to be different, and I need you to be. And most of the time, though, we can't ask someone to do something they're not interested in doing, which is where you get trapped sometimes. Asking your guy to value personal growth and development is like you asking, is like me asking you to do something that you don't care about at all. Hey, I need you to be really into ski racing, and I need you to watch and track all the statistics on SportsCenter and ESPN2, and every time there's a ski racing event on, I need you to, you know, record it, get all the stats, and get really into that because it's my passion. You'd be like, what? No thanks. Like, I have so many better things to do than that. So if we're in this relationship together, I do need you to be X, Y, and Z. So this is where the non-negotiable needs, okay? I need you to actually make some money here. I need you to live with me in the same town. I need you to be into personal growth and development or whatever. So finish this sentence. In order to thrive in my intimate relationship, I need a man who is into personal growth and development, is willing to do the work, who can learn to empathize consistently for the rest of our relationship. Okay, pick one or all of those. Those might be non-negotiable needs you have. They might not be. I know several women in the ESH course who actually don't, this is not a need for their man to be into personal growth and development. That somehow is working for them. That would never in a million years work for me, but it's working for them. Needs. Personal, I need to eat right now. An other need, I broke my arm and I need you to fix it because you're a doctor. Okay. Personal is I need something for myself. I need something for myself, but I can't do it alone. So I need someone to help me with my arm. Right. Non-negotiable needs. I need you to start a family with me. So I need you to be a full yes to making babies. If you're no, I need to move on so that I can fulfill this need with someone who's willing to do that. Okay, the needs hierarchy, Maslow's, you can just Google this, it's everywhere, and is really great. See, at the bottom there, we have our physiological needs. You could call them our survival needs. Food, water, shelter, warmth, clothing, in other words. Safety, right? Then we move into security, stability, freedom from fear, freedom from tyranny, freedom from oppression, freedom from bombs going off. Okay, most of us, if you're listening to this, are living fairly safe lives in the grand scheme of things. In an interpersonal relationship, you might feel very unsafe and insecure in your relationship, which you need to address. Because you don't want to live your life feeling unsafe and insecure in a relationship your whole life. That takes a major toll on your body and your nervous system. Okay? And the research is just getting more and more clear there. And then once we have our safety needs met, we move up to friends, family, spouse, lover, belonging. Belonging with a tribe, belonging with a group of people, feeling accepted, right? That's just a bonus on top of life. And then we move into self-esteem, achieving things, mastering things, recognition at work or in our artistic endeavors, okay, getting respect from people. And then we move at the top, our self-actualization needs, really expressing who we are in a big way in the world. So you can't really focus on the top tier needs if the bottom ones are unstable. For example, someone else taking this class that's worried about food, water, shelter, and warmth would not be interested in the material in this class. They'd be focused on their physiological needs. Okay, nonviolent communication has a list of needs. You can go to this, you can just Google NVC list of needs, and this will pop up. And these are just, if you're not clear about needs, it's new language for you. You can read these as there's some hints here, but I just disagree in some of these being a need, like peace. If you need peace, like I need peace on the global scale. I need peace. I need to live in a country where there's not bombs going off. That's a need of mine. And I'm grateful to live here in Colorado in the States. I don't, however, need peace in my life. I don't need people to always get along with me, always approve of me, always like me. I don't need my wife and my kids to never upset me. Okay, I don't. That's not a peace need I have. So those are two different peace needs, maybe. So you could play with some things in this list when you Google that. Okay, we talked about the couple operating system done well. You on the left, him on the right. In the middle, we have your non-negotiable needs, his and yours. And you have things like a shared view, where we're going, this is what our marriage is about, what our relationship is about, shared language and shared tools so that you can get through the tough stuff when it comes up, because it will. Okay, this is just a nicely balanced relationship. You have your own life. There's enough space for you to go live your life and have completely different interests than him. He's living his life very different than yours, but there's got to be an overlap, right? Where you have some things in life that you share besides a room or your house. You actually bond and connect and are on the same page about a few things. Like, this is big with parents. If you and I are on very different pages around how we parent and there's no overlap there, we're going to need to fight and negotiate until we get to some kind of common ground. And this is the shared reality that I talked about a couple days ago in a class. Okay, so what's the biggest non-negotiable need you have? Well, it's pretty straightforward. You need him to be able to empathize with you. He's got to do empathy. What does that really mean? He feels you, acknowledges your experience is valid, he gets you and understands you in a way that feels good to you. Right? In other words, he gets you. He gets your world. I don't know how people could be in a relationship without this. To me, this is a human need we have that when we don't get it is painful. And it's supposed to be painful and disconnecting when we're with someone who doesn't even understand us, acknowledge who we are, celebrate, and see us. Even with all of our warts and blemishes and faults and insecurities. So the most amazing thing about having a life partner or a long-term partner is that we can do this for each other. And a lot of us grew up with families where we didn't get seen for who we were. We didn't feel accepted for who we were, right? My folks still really don't really get me. And that's okay. I don't need, it's no longer a need, right? So long as I make that a need, I will be in a suffering relationship with my parents. Once I let go of that need, it was very liberating because I no longer needed them to understand me and support me, celebrate me, and now we can actually have a great relationship. It's limited, granted, in its depth and its scope, but it's still a great relationship. So you can have a superficial relationship with your guy if he doesn't get you and doesn't validate you and who you are and your experience, but you're never going to feel the amazing feeling that to belong with someone, to have them actually accept you and get you as you are. And that's not without upset, of course. We get upset by each other, but we continue to relax and rest into embracing someone as they are. This is gold here. This is the power. Once you get this in a monogamous relationship, you're not going anywhere else because this is so good. Yeah, it's very, and this is what our friends ought to give us. And yeah, the people that, you know, our inner circle people, this is what we want in our life. People who know us. And granted, as Byron Katie says, no one will ever really know us. And there can be a close approximation, close enough to have us feel really seen and feel good, okay? So the non-negotiable need that you've got to have to me is that he's got to empathize with you. And some of you might be able to maintain a relationship without that, which is, again, fine. It's just not as satisfying, not remotely as satisfying. Okay, so here's the thing. This is kind of why we're taking this class today, is you won't stand in your non-negotiables if you don't value you and your needs. And this is what I consistently see in this course, is women will get clear on what they need, and then they have a hard time standing in it and saying, this is a deal breaker for me. This is so much of a need that I'm willing to sacrifice our relationship. I'm willing to change jobs, move countries, move states, move towns. I'm willing to do whatever it takes because this is a need of mine. And I'm not flinching here. So if that's hard for you to step into your non-negotiable needs, it means you have a self-worth issue, a self-value issue, a self-love issue. So you want to ask yourself, what's in the way of me valuing me? And as I posted on Instagram the other day, the degree to which you value yourself is the degree to which others value you. Why would he value you if you don't value you? It's a really important question, yeah? Why on earth would you expect him to value you when you don't? Now, this isn't black and white, like you either love yourself or you don't. This has to do with parts of our life, areas of our life, aspects of our life. Because I know you value yourself in the area that's highest on your POS. I'm pretty sure you value yourself, something you're good at, something you have expertise in, something you have experience with, that you're maybe a teacher around. You probably value yourself there. And even if you're a perfectionist, you would be willing to admit, yeah, I do this pretty well. I want to do better, but I do this pretty well. And I like that I do this pretty well, this thing. It could be mothering. It could be that you're a teacher at a school. It could be that you're a carpenter. It could be that you're an artist, a musician, a singer. Whatever it is, notice that in the areas highest on your POS and your values that you appreciate some aspect of yourself. And then in the areas where it's things are not important to you, you don't value yourself. You might feel insecure. You feel less than. You feel weak, helpless. You feel unworthy, unlovable. Like maybe you don't count. You don't matter. Right? So both are probably true, yeah? So I really get frustrated when I see personal growth people and therapists and people talking about you either love yourself or you don't. It's not that. It doesn't work like that. It's a continuum, and it has to do with different parts of your life and different things that you value and prioritize. Okay, so you're going to learn to value yourself in two main ways. Number one is do the 5 C's that we talked about in the course, and do the 180 on the core story or belief. Okay. And number two is with your POS. I was just talking about that. So we dive into the core issue. I'll just talk about these one at a time, and then we'll take your questions. We dive into the core issue, wound, or belief with the 180. So example, let's say you feel unlovable. Well, I'm just unlovable. I feel worthless. I feel inadequate. Whatever. Let's go with unlovable. Okay. That's a story that's just not true, but that's your story. Okay. So you want to see how this story and having this story helped you. What did telling yourself this story, I'm unlovable, help you get in life? What did it help you do in life? How did it help you become something? What superpower arose out of that? OK, Okay, you also want to see why, where, and how this story got created. So kids that grow up in families where one parent is pretty absent, they will slowly over time tell themselves a story that the reason the parent isn't around much is because of me. I'm unlovable. But that's not because of the parent told them that story, right? That's because they told themselves that story. And some of you might still be telling yourself that story. I'm unlovable. And that's a tired old story that needs serious investigation and inquiry and evaluation. So you want to see the other side. Where in your life have you felt lovable from day one and by whom? So if my story is I'm unlovable and, well, I grew up in a family that did this and that and the other to me, or I'm only lovable when, you know, I perform or give sex or whatever the agreement was that I grew up with, where was I actually lovable from day one? And if you grew up in a family that fed you, you were, obviously they loved you. Not in the form of your values and priorities and preferences, but in the way they valued you. So an example would be, I felt lovable in my life. I felt unloved by my dad and loved by my dad. So example, after doing this kind of work on myself, I saw that I felt unlovable when I didn't excel and perform and win in the way that my dad wanted me to, mostly in sports, in the realm of sports. But I felt very loved by my dad when I was a complete asshole to him, time in and time out, all for many, many years, I was an asshole to my dad. And guess what he did? He didn't cut me off. He didn't tell me he was never going to talk to me again. What did he do? He loved me. It was pretty amazing to actually see that he, even though I was being a complete jerk, he just kept loving me. And that takes a pretty big person to do that. And he did that. And he has no personal growth experience. He has very little self-awareness. He just has what's in his heart as his love for me, his son. Right? Pretty amazing. So if you look closely, you'll actually see it and you'll find it. And you might want to list all the other people, including pets, that have indeed loved you when someone else was not loving you or making you a priority. And really, I don't even like to use the language, they weren't loving you, because any parent does love their kids. I don't care how horrific it is. It's just they're not able to express it and show it and demonstrate it in a way that you are your fantasy, you know, in the way that your fantasy wants. They're doing it in other ways. Okay, that's step one. You got to do the five C's again, 180, go into your core belief and start to change it. Change that story, because it's just an untrue story. What's true is that at times you feel unlovable and at times you feel lovable, right? You feel unloved by your man at times, and at times you probably feel loved by him or you feel loved by other people in your life. You're getting that love or that care from someone else, somewhere else. Okay, value yourself by looking again at your POS. What do I mean? Notice that what is most important to you is an area you value yourself in, and what's least important you are going to value yourself less in. Okay? Write a list of your top five areas where you feel insecure, inadequate, incompetent, or weak. And you might do that specifically in the area of your relationship with your guy. Okay? Top five areas where you feel like you're not valuing yourself. Could be in the area of work, family, your profession, your artistic skills, your relating skills, your communication skills, your reactivity, whatever it is, okay, write it down. The top five, your attractiveness, right? That's a big one for women. Then note that two things are going on. Okay, you got your little list of five, and now you're going to notice that two things are going on. Number one is that you probably have room for improvement in whatever area you're judging. Okay, and then you're going to make a commitment to work on it and get accountability to, quote, improve that part of you or your life. So for a number of years, I felt incredibly incompetent and inadequate around money. And when I noted that this was going on, it was like, well, I have some room for improvement. I used to judge money. I used to judge people that had money. I would judge people. Yeah, I was just like a total ass and really contracted around money. I had a lot of money baggage. So that just showed me, right? And I was in pain around some money issues that I had. So I had room for improvement when I got honest with myself. I was like, wow, I have a lot to learn here. I am very ignorant. No wonder I feel so inadequate. So what happened? I set to work. I hired a friend of mine who did me a favor, and every couple times a month we would meet and he would teach me how to use QuickBooks. Because I had no idea. I was in my 30s and I had no idea how to balance my checkbook barely. And I was doing a piss poor job of keeping track of my finances. So he started tutoring me and mentoring me. And it took a year. And by the end of that year, I knew QuickBooks. And guess how I felt about myself? I felt really fucking good. It was a major victory for me. And then the next year, I just took it to the next level. And I kept learning and studying and understanding money and finances and investing and bookkeeping and all that stuff. So I still have more to learn there. But guess what? I feel a lot more capable, competent, adequate, and I value myself much more there. Okay? Number two, the second thing that's going on, all right, when you're not valuing yourself or you're feeling insecure, is you're subordinating or comparing yourself to someone else's view, program, or opinions of how you, quote, should be. Okay, this is huge. I taught an entire couple of classes on this at the end of last summer to a private group, and this was so enlightening for people. Like, oh my God, the reason I feel bad about myself is because I'm in constant comparison to fantasies about how I should be, how I should look, how I should act, how I should do business, how I should, you know, it's just constant. And then you get on Facebook and it doesn't help. Most of the time, we compare ourselves on Facebook to other people's lives, their victories, their successes, because that's mostly all the stuff they're posting, right? They're not posting the struggle as much. So we'll compare ourselves and then feel bad. We'll feel inadequate. So if I compared myself to back when I was learning money to someone who had a lot of money and was really dialed, and I thought I should just be like them right now on the spot, that's total BS. I'm subordinating to a fantasy. So what I realized is, okay, I admire and I look up to that person who's very tight and clean around money and has a lot of money and is doing money well. I was like, okay, then I need to do the work to feel that way about myself. I can't just expect to feel good without doing the work. I have to earn my way into feeling good about myself. So the same is true for you. If you feel bad about yourself in some area of life, you're only going to feel good about yourself when you earn your way there. And you work hard at that thing, whatever it is, to feel better about yourself. Okay? Okay, example. Okay, let's use the classic example for women. Okay, there's a little trigger warning here because some of you have issues with this. Okay, so let's talk about your attractiveness, because you might have an insecurity that your guy feels that you are unattractive, which is why he pulls away from you. Okay, you might actually make up that story. And it might actually be going on for him. We don't know. But whatever the case is, most women, given the barrage of body image shit that goes, you know, that you get inundated with on a daily basis from pretty much birth onward, you got stuff to work out there, right? With your appearance. So let's say you have your attractiveness is the issue you feel insecure around or where you don't value yourself. And number one is you ask yourself the question, do I have room for improvement here? And we're not talking about plastic surgery. We're talking about, well, could I, is there something I could do about my appearance? Is it my fashion sense? Is it that I don't eat very well? Is it that I'm not exercising? Is there some part of my body or my being physically that I don't like? And if I tease out the whole BS about comparing myself to all the supermodels and Sports Illustrated and all that crap, and I just get that off my back and I go, okay, is there genuine complaint here I have about myself and can I do something about it? So the most obvious things we can do something about, right, that's outside of our genes and what we were born with is we can eat well, we can exercise, and we can take really good care of who we are. That's the way we show ourselves that we value ourselves. And I don't care what you look like, that's attractive to be around. That's an attractive human quality. Very attractive. So we could say, I don't exercise, so perhaps I can take care of my heart and body better by raising this up in my POS. I could value this more. I could prioritize this more. And I could get some accountability around that. Okay? I'm just saying maybe, all right? Don't believe me. I'm not trying to add another layer here. I'm just trying to have you be really, really honest and say, is there a little room for improvement here? Okay, number two, where am I comparing myself to a fantasy woman and then beating myself up? Okay, who is she? What does she look like? What's her deal? What magazine is she on? Or is she one of my friends? Is she my mom? Is she someone else? And I'm just not that person. And I'm expecting myself to be that person and to look like that person. Wow, that's quite a stretch, right? If I expect myself to look like the guys on the cover of Men's Help with a completely shaved chest and ripped abs and big pecs and huge biceps, and a chiseled face with dark black hair and brown eyes, if I expect myself to look like that, man, I'm going to beat up on myself a lot. Or here's a common one for guys. It's like money and our performance is some of the big ones that we can have to deal with. And so if I'm not winning all the time and if I don't get people's attention, then there's something fucked up and wrong with me. And I have to remember I'm on the journey and that's okay. And I'm right where I need to be. And so are you. So stop comparing yourself to the fantasy woman and find out who she is and what you're doing there and really investigate that, because that is not going to help you value yourself more. If you want to strive to look like, let's say you want to look like a marathon runner and be like this tiny woman that these tiny legs and just muscle that lives in Boulder, Colorado, go for it. And you could achieve that probably. You would just have to work really hard at living a lifestyle like she lives. But my guess is most of you wouldn't want to be that. But you could. If you really wanted to, you could look like that. We can try to make ourselves into what we want if we try hard enough. But at a certain day, at the end of the day, we're up against our genes and our heredity and just our DNA and who we are, what we've been given. So know that, okay? You also, another little trick we can do is own the traits of someone you're admiring. If you are admiring like the business savvy of Oprah Winfrey, for example, and you want to be that powerful of an entrepreneur or business owner, or even just the gal down the street that has a successful accounting practice, or the woman in your neighborhood that you perceive as a really good mom, you can own that in yourself and be that. So you zero in on the traits that you admire and you take responsibility and you find out where they already exist in your life. And again, it has to do with where your POS is. If you judge another mom as like, well, she's really caring and I'm not. And so then that's the trait you want to own. Well, I want to own that I'm caring. Well, where in your life are you already caring? Well, I'm caring with Susie, my friend. I'm caring at work. I'm caring, I'm just not caring, very caring at home. I come home irritated and I snap and okay, fine, but so look at where you're carrying, right? And then to transfer it over, you just move the parenting thing up the value hierarchy. Okay, so quick note, by the way, when men are in their hearts, everyone is as beautiful just as they are. We don't have the same hang-ups as you do about your appearance. Shallow men might, but deeper down, they have the capacity to accept you and love you just as you are, okay? So sadly, a lot of young men will compare themselves. They'll be looking at the supermodel photos and they'll be watching porn, every day. And that trains them to have a preference to how to get turned on, but it doesn't, they're not in their heart when they're surfing porn. So when you actually get a guy in his heart, all that stuff falls away. It doesn't matter. And what matters is the connection he feels with you together. And that's true for women back to men, right? A man could be whatever he looks like. And if he's in his heart and you're in your heart, everything falls away. And there's just the connection. And that's what we're going for. All right. Questions or comments? You can raise your hand in here by clicking the little icon if you're new to this format. You can type a question or a comment, and I want to see if I can get to as many people as I can. We're going to stop close to the top of the hour, so if you got a question, ask it soon, because this is one of the few examples where I'm not going to stay on for a couple of hours. Okay, so I see Lisa has her hand up and MJ, so we'll start with MJ. And if you accidentally hit the hand thing, just hit it again, and that'll put your hand down. Okay, MJ, you there? Oh, okay, hold on. Turn off the... Okay, go ahead.
My question is on that I'm struggling valuing myself in relation to my chronic health issues.
Okay.
I've always been in the growth and development camp through the 16 years of our marriage, and husband has been in the safe, secure camp. Okay. But when I go into a health flare-up, I become very dependent on him to help take care of me, and I go right into that safe and secure camp with him.
Okay.
And then when I get myself back into feeling normal, I go back into growth mode, and I'm not happy with my man not being in growth with me all this time.
Yeah. Okay, I'm following you.
And what was that?
I said, I'm following you.
Okay, and so ever since I got sick with these chronic things a couple years back, about 4 years now, I've been working my butt off to heal myself, even though they tell me it's incurable. I don't believe that.
Good for you.
I eat whole foods, clean, exercise, and healing myself has been like a full-time job for me.
Yeah.
Because I don't want to live my life this way. Very high on my POS.
Yep.
And relationship and the fulfillment with that is secondary, along with my kids and everything else.
Okay.
Is
there a question in there?
So, yeah, you see how I flip back and forth depending on how I'm doing.
Yeah,
I guess I feel stuck and trapped in our marriage sometimes when I have these health flares and can't take care of myself.
Yeah, well, there might be some unconscious. Have you worked much with your psychology around this whole thing?
As far as what, I mean, I have a counselor.
Well, what kind of like unconscious investment might be there around your husband taking care of you?
For him?
Well, what I'm hearing, what I just heard, basically, I'm just going to reflect back what I heard, is you get your connection needs met when you get sick.
I wouldn't say connection, but like if I'm laying in bed all day because I'm in chronic pain,
yeah.
I have someone there that can help with the kids, with bringing me dinners or food. Is he there emotionally and spiritually taking care of me? I'd say not really.
Yeah, so you get some needs, though, met. You get taken care of, at least on a physical level, when you get sick.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I'm guessing you're invested in being taken care of.
When I'm in chronic pain,
Yeah, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so as long as you're invested in being taken care of with the chronic pain, that dynamic is working for you.
Okay.
So, you know, I'm not obviously working with you, but I would just lightly suggest here that you take a look at that in a deeper way, that what would happen, because I imagine you have a huge fear here, if I wasn't with my husband, what would happen then if I got, quote, chronically, you know, in pain and sick?
Right, yeah, I do.
Right, so...
Because I haven't been in this pain in, like, a year, and then I had this health flare.
Yeah.
So that terrifies me.
Totally.
But then
so,
the past year.
Okay. So if you're into growth and development, you're gonna hang on. If you're into growth and development, face your fear.
Right.
Stop running and face your fear.
Okay.
And that's another way you can show you valuing you. is even if my husband left or if I left him, I'm going to, because of who I am, because you have a warrior inside of you that's like, I'm going to figure it out. I'll be okay. I'm going to figure it out. I'm a big girl here.
Right.
Even if I have to hire someone to take care of me.
I do have to take care of myself sometimes because he travels a lot.
Yeah. So that just shows us that you can do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So face your next level of fear.
Okay.
Cool.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks, MJ. All right. Great. Aaron, what's up? NNN versus non-negotiable needs versus wants. I often talk myself out of what might be a need and redefine it as a want, and then I take care of myself and don't confront or challenge him to support me better. I'm glad you're calling yourself out on that. Yeah, I mean, that's what a lot of you are doing, is talk yourself out of, it's not that important. You know, especially if you're getting labeled by a man or your society as too emotional, too needy, you're insecure, you just have all these issues. If you get labeled that a lot, you can start to believe it, right? And be like, oh yeah, maybe I am making such a big deal out of nothing. Maybe I'm the problem again. You're catching it at least. So now the work for you, Aaron, is to see what's in the way of me really standing in this need. What is it? What is it that's in the way? Okay, where am I not willing to value myself higher than I currently am? Okay, who else? You can raise your hand if you got a question or a share, or you want clarification on something I said, or you can type in the same. I mean, is this making sense? I want to make sure that you guys are getting this. You know, some of this is review, right? And I'm trying to point you even more towards what you've got to do here. Yeah, Erin's saying, you know, when I'm saying, okay, where are you not valuing yourself? She's saying, sure, fear and losing relationship. So fear of losing relationship. Exactly. Another fear, like MJ. You know, do I want to stay afraid here? Or, you know, here's what you could do. Another tweak on this, Aaron, is to wake up every day and say, I choose to be afraid. I choose to be afraid of losing relationship and making myself smaller than I am. I choose this. I completely choose it. And the more you can say that, the more you see that you're choosing it. It's a choice. And the quicker you're going to be to choose something different. Okay, what else, folks? So hands up or typing questions, comments. Gina, what's up? Gina says, I have a need for an emotional connection or connection, period, for sexual desire and intimacy. My husband calls this conditions and holds back because of this. This leaves our sex life dead, not sure how to handle this. Okay, what I understand, Gina, because there's maybe some language barrier here. I have a need for emotional connection, for sexual desire and intimacy. My husband calls this conditions and holds back. Well, I think maybe it depends on how you're framing it and how often you're saying it and how kind of where it's coming from. I think most people are with you that we have a need in a long-term relationship for a sexual connection and intimacy, and even an emotional connection. And remember, intimacy is closeness and separateness, both. So you're just talking about the need you have for part of the equation. So you can remind him that, hey, look, the definition of intimacy is closeness and it's separateness. We do the separateness thing really well. I want to do the closeness thing because that's a need of mine. I have a need for space also, and I have a need for closeness. And if you're not willing to do the closeness thing with me, sex and otherwise, then, you know, I'm not sure why would I be in a relationship where I can't be physically and emotionally close to someone. That's called a friendship. So if he feels threatened like that, like that's conditions etc., you can push back and be like, I hear you, that's how it feels for you, and that just doesn't fit for me. Where it can get manipulative is for you, if you were honest, you might, there could be a chance you're manipulating him and saying the only way I'm going to be in a relationship with you is if you give me sex or something. That could be pretty manipulative, but it doesn't sound like you're doing that. But again, I'm not living with you, so I don't really know. But we all have those two needs. We need to be separate and we need to be connected. The fantasy, of course, is that we're connected emotionally all the time. That's impossible. But my wife and I work to keep a secure home base, which includes separateness and connection. And that is very doable. And that means that there's a clear, clean space when I walk in the home. And if there's any charge or activation or resentment going on, we clear it out until we get back to our happy place. But it's not really happy. It's just secure. And it's safe, and there's a mutual love and respect there. Aaron's saying, yeah, that feels yucky to choose fear. Yeah, well, do that until it feels so bad that you do something different. In the meantime, choose your yucky fear and say, yeah, I choose to live in fear over here. Overvaluing myself. Okay, Samantha, I struggle with my non-negotiable needs around intimacy. I get very upset when I don't get sex, affection, compliments, etc. I've been accused of being a sex addict. I have confusion if my non-negotiable needs for sex is healthy or unhealthy. It's hard to clarify a fantasy versus reality. Can you restate the comments about wants versus needs? Yeah, I mean, if you lean towards, like some people actually regulate through sex. So you could call that a sex addiction, but if you need sex in order to feel okay and safe, you probably have a history of sexual abuse. You probably learned that to feel loved and okay, you got sex. And so that's, I'm not saying that's true for you, but that's true for some people with a strong sexual drive. It can be a way they regulate. So I'd be looking at that and I would go find someone to give me feedback on that. I wouldn't necessarily go find a sex addict addiction treatment program or anything like that, because most of that shit is just pathology and it's not trying to understand the root of the behavior. It's just going to kind of blame you and label you. But if you're honest, you know, you got to ask yourself, am I using this to regulate and to feel okay about myself, to feel loved? Because there's 100 different ways we can connect emotionally, physically, without having intercourse or sex, for example. So for you, it probably is more uncomfortable to lean towards other ways of connection. So I would be saying, hey, let's slow down and see if we can emotionally connect. Let's connect physically without finishing the job, so to speak. Like, let's not climax. Let's not have intercourse. Let's no penetration. Let's just be together and hold hands and look in each other's eyes and breathe. Let's explore intimacy in a myriad of number of ways without my habitual thing that I do. Because, you know, when someone's accusing you of being a sex addict, that they're picking up on some energy of you that feels probably desperate, needy, whatever, would be my guess. And when you get very upset when you don't get things like sex, affection, or compliments, again, that's your opportunity to get stronger there. So in the face, we all need practice learning how to be with rejection, because even in a long-term relationship that's awesome, you're going to feel rejection. Sometimes you're going to want sex and your partner's not. There's going to be rejection there. Sometimes you want to go on the trip to Maui and your partner doesn't. There's going to be rejection there. Sometimes you want to move and upgrade to a bigger house or a smaller house and your partner doesn't want to. There's going to be rejection. So it's really important that we learn how to get strong in the face of our partner saying no. To just feel and breathe into that and get okay with that. Do a nest meditation, get a hurt kid meditation, just be more and more okay with the feelings and the felt experience that comes up when you get a no. MJ saying, I like that about fear. Cool. Sandra, love this. I choose. Yeah. Or chose. Yeah. And Aaron saying, just a share. These comments, questions from others regarding sex needs are hitting the nail on the head for me. Thank you. Cool. Can you define the difference between sex and love addict? Well, a love addict, there is no such thing as a love addict. There's only an infatuation addict. So an infatuation addict would be someone who only wants instant gratification and only wants good feelings and no bad feelings. And so they will bounce from relationship to relationship. The moment it gets hard, they will leave that relationship and go to the next one. That would be someone who's just addicted to infatuation. And that type of person is prone to affairs, acting out, cheating, porn, you name it, because they want to feel the dopamine, right? So the sex and, quote, love addict that I'm calling infatuation addict, what they have in common is they have a dopamine fix. Through some behavior, they get the dopamine rush, and that feels good, and so they keep wanting that thing. But that's not intimacy. Cool. So Gina is saying, to clarify, my husband feels that if he gets an erection and puts his hand on me, that should be enough for me to get aroused. And me wanting some more connection first is putting conditions on our having sex. Oh, got it. Yeah, so I'm hearing you want foreplay, and he doesn't care about that. And this is classic male-female dynamics. Men often connect in their heart after sex and don't need a heart connection before sex. They use sex to get a heart connection, and women need the heart connection first to even open their body, right? If you're being really true to yourself, you want an emotional lubrication, you want emotional connection prior to sex. And that's awesome. And his way is also awesome. It's not wrong, and one's not better than the other, but he needs to learn your way and you need to learn his way. That's a relationship. So sometimes if he's hard and just wants to have sex right there on the spot, it would be great practice for you to lean into that sometimes without overriding yourself and abandoning yourself and resenting him. But I'm sure once in a while you might feel turned on, and you might already have kind of a good connection. You haven't been fighting for a few days or something, and it's like, oh, okay, yeah, I can give you this and let's see what happens. But other days that's a total no, and you can just speak up. Like, we got to be true to ourselves. So you can't, though, have a fantasy that you're going to have an emotional connection every single time before sex. That's not going to happen. Unless you're with a woman or you're with a man who also wants the same thing, and he always wants an emotional heart connection before sex. But because of the polarity dynamics and the way the universe works, one of you is going to polarize. You can't have two like people for very long before over time it's going to polarize again, where someone's going to be the one that just wants sex now without a heart connection. So let me know, Gina, if that helps. And Aaron saying, got it, thank you. Cool. Nice, a lot of sex comments and questions today. That's great. I'm guessing that's where there's some progress is what I would say, and energy here. It's such a vibrant part of our life. And remember, when you're really challenged in your marriage, your relationship, you're going to be having sex less most of the time. Some people can have the, quote, make-up sex or break-up sex or whatever, and have that kind of excitement when you're really angry at each other. Sure, that can happen. But for the most part, you know, when you're really struggling, sex is a luxury, and it's something you do when it's the thing you earn after you work through the challenging stuff. You earn your way into each other's bodies and hearts. Gina's saying, yes, it does. Thank you. Cool. And MJ, that was great about sex and male-female dynamics. Great. Any other more introverted people not speaking up right now that want to? We only have a few minutes left. I just want to give some of the quieter folks, if you're feeling like you want to ask a question and you're like, oh, I'm kind of scared, kind of nervous, it's okay. Raise your hand anyway, or you can type it in. And remember, your partnership with your guy, if you're with a guy right now, I know some of you are probably single. If you're with a guy, it's challenging so that you can learn a lesson here. There's something for you to learn and master. Until you get it, you're going to stay stuck in the issue you're struggling with. So stay in the fire of the issue and learn what you need to learn there. And for a lot of you, it really is stepping into your non-negotiable needs by valuing yourself, by saying, hey, no, I give a shit about myself here. I'm not going to back down on this one anymore. And that might be a shock to him. It might upset him because you've trained him to be okay with the way he does it. You got to be willing to really step into it. Okay, Kristen is asking, you've mentioned before that when setting boundaries and standing in non-negotiables, some partners will react in a fearful way and push back because of the changing dynamic and their own insecurities. Right, I was just speaking about that. Do you find that most people will have fear response initially when they accept the changes once their nervous system settles into the changes? Yes. I realize what to look for in our partner's behavior for long-term commitment to my non-negotiables, but is it realistic to expect there will be an initial fear response to the non-negotiables and changes before our partner accepts and commits to them? Yes. What do we look for? Well, you want to be with someone who stays in relationship with you. That's kind of the frame that I need to, if this keeps coming up, so I need to teach this about staying in relationship. So one of the agreements that you can have in your relationship is, look, when it gets hard and when you get upset by me changing over here and standing up for myself in a whole new way, is that you're going to stay in relationship with me. You're not going to leave and feel threatened, and you're going to at least stay and work it out with me. Whether you stay with me or not, it's a different story, but you're going to stay in relationship to like understand me here and understand yourself with our changes. So we have to zoom back out to context again and have the kind of relationship where you can have zoom out and set context for the relationship. Hey, our relationship's about growth. It's about wholeness. We're going to trigger each other, and it's really for our benefit, even though it's going to hurt and suck in the moment. So when you have that context and that frame, that's something to really lean into and relax into, because that's what's holding you, right, is the frame, the context. And then when it happens in the moment, I like to give people a heads up. Hey, I'm going to be, you know, setting boundaries and saying no more. I've been saying yes most of our relationship, and it's just for my growth and my development, it's actually good for me to say no, because I'm seeing all the ways in which I give myself away, and that started to feel really bad lately, and I'm going to be changing that. So heads up, honey, I'm going to be saying no more, and it might upset you. So again, that's a kind of a preventative, proactive stance. And then if for some reason we haven't done either of those, we haven't set context and we haven't been proactive, in the moment, just hold space for our partner's reaction. They're going to react and validate their experience. Get their world and be like, yeah, makes sense you're upset because I've been over here one way and now I'm another way. Makes sense you're mad or hurt or you don't trust me. Yeah, totally makes sense. Got it. Thanks for telling me. Right? We go back to the basic tools. So let me know if that was helpful, Kristen. Aaron's saying, would love for you to do more around sex in long-term relationship. Cool. My wife and I were just talking about that last night, actually. So you're tapped into us, Aaron. You're on to us. Yeah, Aaron, that'll probably happen. I'm going to be teaching a bigger course in the fall, and sex is going to be a part of it for sure. And the Roots community people have been asking, so I'm gonna probably do a live call on sex or two or five or something. We'll see. So thanks for the nudge. Kristen's saying, thank you, that helps. MJ, that would be great. I would like that too. Cool. Theta, what's up, Theta? Thank you for this review. NNN is so important because it's about self-knowledge, self-love, and self-expression. When we can do this, then we're well prepared for any relationship. That's right. And there'll be things that you're always going to be unprepared for in any relationship. So that's the power, is relationship shows us where we have room to grow. And when we have, when we're like us, this tribe, we say yes to that. We're not resistant to that. We say, okay, all right, I'm going to maybe throw a little tantrum here, like Aaron did, and because of my fear and stuff, but I'm going to grow anyway, because it's who I am, right? I know Aaron's going to face that, so. Yeah. Sex. And for those of you who have already finished the roots or the course, you know, from time to time I'll be doing things in here, but if you wanted more contact, and particularly around this sex stuff, you'll want to hang out with us over at the Roots community, because we do calls twice a month like this. All right. Anyone else before we stop? Last call. I'm going to do a last call. Last call. Sandra saying just thanks. You're welcome, Sandra. You got it? So remember, this will be posted in the Roots, or excuse me, I keep saying Roots. This will be posted in the members area of ESH, and you can have, you know, review this whenever you want. So please, please do that. And then Kristen is asking, do you have a complimentary program like ESH and Roots for men? Yeah, complimentary. My complimentary entry point for guys is my Cock Talk group. So you go to jasongaddis.com/cocktalk. And I'm going to change the language of that a little bit, because it's scaring off, I think, some guys who are like, cock talk? What the hell? I never use that word. That might be, they're not ready to own the word cock, and they're who they are. It feels awkward or something. But whatever, that's the way it is now. And there's a ton of good content in there. And there's a free private Facebook group you can ask to join. I've got about 150 guys in there. And pretty soon I'll be offering a paid experience for the men. So, but that's a good way to get, like, to be, for a man to be part of a private group and actually, like, talk about what's really going on. I mean, guys are, some guy was just posting about his sex life in there yesterday. We had a big conversation about masturbation last week in there. You know, we're getting, I mean, this is the way I roll, right? So we're getting super real. And if your guy or the guy you're talking about is interested, then yeah. Sandra's saying, scaring my guy, so thanks. Yeah. Some guys aren't ready for cock talk yet. It's just too much of a jump. You know, your guy might be like, okay, I just want a place where I can just talk about, like, my feelings or something, or where I can, like, introduce myself and say, hi, I'm new at this. I hear you. So, good feedback. And, as you know, the guy I want to work with is the guy who wants to go all the way, who's not afraid to just get after it. And those are the guys I am working with. Yep, Kristen saying thanks for this info. It's been a great class. Cool. All right, everybody, I'm going to wind it down. Thanks so much. Again, thanks for investing in yourself. Thanks for being on it. Thanks for staying in relationship with me and each other, participating in the Facebook group. It's always lively in there. Appreciate. And, you know, don't be afraid to challenge women in there who are a little stuck in either their victim story or they're not seeing the other side. Let's call each other out, like hold each other accountable there and say, hey, go back and do the exercise. This is a way we can love each other. Remember, love is challenge and support. It's not just holding someone's hand, it's slapping someone's hand once in a while. Okay. Thanks, everybody. Have a wonderful rest of your day. Talk soon.